A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi there, and welcome to the Explaining History podcast. And in this podcast, I want to continue with the theme of looking at the Paris Peace Conference. There's an awful lot to be drawn out of this massive, massive diplomatic summit at the end of the First World War, this gigantic moment of the beginnings of notions of world governance, in a way. That happens in the most curious and ad hoc of manners in 1919. And I want to talk about Georges Clemenceau today. Now, previously we've talked about Woodrow Wilson. And Clemenceau is, of course, a very different kind of character. In previous podcasts, one that I did a week or two ago, looking at Wilson's motivations and looking at kind of revisionist approaches, Adam Tooze's, Margaret Macmillan, on Wilson, and exploring the fact that he wasn't this noble liberal crusader as he is portrayed to be, but like all other world leaders, looking out for the interests of the country that he leads. The picture that we get of Clemenceau is equally mythologized, referred to as the Tiger of France. He was far more capable of conciliation. He was far more an adept negotiator. And whilst he wanted to punish and to reduce the power of Germany, because he could see the threat that Germany would pose within a generation, he was also aware that the power of the United States of America now eclipsed every European nation, and that America would be crucial to France's defence in the future. So, for example, if you compare the actions of Clemenceau at the Paris Peace Conference with, say, for example, de Gaulle, after the Second World War, Clemenceau is a far more amenable and adaptable and realistic figure than de Gaulle, and far less belligerent when it comes to Great Britain and the United States. The British and the Americans had initially not wanted the Paris Peace Conference to be situated in Paris. They thought it was better to have it in a neutral country. They thought that the devastation caused by war would cloud the delegates and their perspectives. Wilson himself wouldn't go and see the trenches, he wouldn't go and see the no man's land and any of the areas of northern France devastated by the Germans, believing it would cause him to become more judgmental, more emotional. No doubt it probably would have done. Geneva was favoured originally, but it was suspected by the British and the Americans in the most alarmist way, this was probably wildly unrealistic, of being insecure, of being riddled with German agents, and it was actually, on hindsight, better to have the more secure place of Paris, which was also more likely to placate French sensibilities and to smooth ruffled feathers. It was seen by Wilson as being an appropriate diplomatic act, and by Lloyd George to allow, against their better judgment, the conference to take place there. To Clemenceau, the question of French security was the key one when it came to the Paris Peace Conference. Clemenceau had been a young man, aged 28, when France had been invaded by Prussia in 1870 during the Franco-Prussian War. The war had devastating consequences for France, the end of the Second Empire under Louis Napoleon, the creation of the Third Republic, the Paris Commune, the Siege of Paris, where the Communards seized power and initiated a period of bloody civil war in France, which eventually led to the siege of Paris and its reduction to starvation levels. And after these humiliations, France was locked out of European diplomacy for two decades until the Bismarckian system of diplomacy, which drew Austria, Hungary and Russia into the League of Three Emperors with the new German Empire, leaving France isolated and the only other power in Europe being an indifferent Great Britain, who often had a highly conflicting and highly volatile relationship with France over imperial claims in places such as Africa. Clemenceau in 1871 had voted against peace terms with Germany, considering them to be far too onerous, including the loss of Alsace-Lorraine. And he had spent his career both in journalism and politics sounding out the anti-German message. Germany was an existential threat to France and always would be. Margaret Macmillan writes in Peacemakers, "My life hatred," he told an American journalist shortly before he died, "has been for Germany because of what she has done to France." Clemenceau was a realist and was aware that no adequate defence against Germany could happen without allies, that France required the British and now the Americans to stand up against a country that had booming industries, a growing population, inflows of wealth from exports. And France, after the glory days of the Second Empire, which was the height of France's military and economic power and diplomatic power mid-century, had been in decline for the period after 1870. France's solution to the problem of Germany manifests itself in two allies: in Russia, with whom France signed a treaty in 1892, and Great Britain, with whom France signed the Entente Cordiale in 1904. And if you previously heard me talk about the idea of the Ring of Steel, the German Empire and their Austro-Hungarian allies automatically interpreted this as the surrounding of the Germanic world, basically, by enemies in this Ring of Steel, as they called it. By 1918, Clemenceau was not convinced that Germany had been sufficiently devastated as to not pose a threat to the French in a decade or two to come. There was still a larger number of Germans and a more vigorous birth rate in Germany than in France. And France would still need effective allies. Where the Russians were now no longer part of the equation because of the Russian Revolution and the removal of Russia for a period of time from the international system, really to re-emerge as a significant player after 1928 under Stalin, the USA was the power that the French would look to pick up the military and economic slack left by Russia. And here we would have a fundamental problem. This is something that Adam Tooze writes about extensively in The Deluge: the inability to stabilise the security situation in Europe, and particularly France's security, creates the conditions for future war. The retreat of America into isolation, which is something we'll kind of look at a little way along, meant that the vision that Clemenceau had was unlikely to be realised. Clemenceau wanted a formal military alliance with the British and the Americans that would ensure the protection of France, and he looked at the proposed alternative, the League of Nations, as an unworkable situation. He basically said, you know, unless the League of Nations has its own vast army that would be able to come to France's defence if Germany invaded again, that is a waste of time. And the proposed legal sanctions instead that the League of Nations was meant to be able to employ are toothless and won't stop a single German division. To place some of the starting points of the French delegation in a kind of a context, consider these facts. 1 in 4 of all Frenchmen between 18 and 30 had died in the war. That was 1.3 million soldiers out of a pre-war population of 40 million people overall. The French lose a higher proportion of its population than any other of the belligerents, that's including Russia. 2 times as many, French soldiers had been wounded. France's coal mines had been deliberately flooded. One of the bedrocks of the French economy, and factories that had been a huge part of the French economy had been either destroyed or taken apart piece by piece and shipped off into Germany. A total of 6,000 square miles of France before the war had produced 20% of French crops and 90% of its iron ore and 65% of its steel had been utterly destroyed. So it might have made sense for Wilson to go and see the level of devastation, but then again, perhaps it was partly because Wilson understood these statistics full well that he didn't actually want to go and see them with his own eyes. Clemenceau was nearly 80 by the time the peace conference began. He was 78 years old, in point of fact, not in the best of health, and was quite unaccustomed to having to deal with the vast amounts of information at his fingertips. It wouldn't be fair to suggest that he was an anti-intellectual, but certainly he was dismissive of the economists, the engineers, the diplomats.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
The political theorists who had been hired and appointed in order to create flows of meaningful information to Clemenceau every single day, much of what they had to tell him, he didn't really want to know. He had a small inner circle, and perhaps Clemenceau had reached a point in life whereby his ability to manage the amount of detail that the conference required was starting to elude him. Clemence is an extremely well-travelled man and had spent many years in both Britain and America. And so he wasn't the kind of insular figure that normally fares rather badly at international diplomatic conferences. He understood the British and he understood American sensibilities, having lived in New York. But it didn't mean that he was likely to compromise unnecessarily. The British were, in his eyes, unwelcome occupiers in the Middle East, and above all things, he sought to extend French control over Syria. But he had also gained an immense reputation in France from 1917 onwards. As Prime Minister, he took on the role of holding the government and the war effort together at its most difficult point. The final push by the Germans towards Paris in the Ludendorff Spring Offensive was responded to by Clemenceau with an almost Churchillian resolve of no surrender at any cost, even when it looked like the Ludendorff Offensive would break through. Now, Wilson hasn't got anywhere near the hands-on experience of a war that Clemenceau has, and certainly hasn't got the moral authority as a war leader that Clemenceau has. Lloyd George is hailed in Britain as, you know, as his colloquially known, the man who won the war. But really, this was about Lloyd George's handling of the war industries and his development of a vast new military-industrial complex to win the war. It wasn't talking in any way, this term, the man who won the war, is no reference to his stature as a war leader in the same way that Clemenceau had earned. So the combination here of the unbelievable devastation to France and the stoicism of Clemenceau had earned Clemenceau a particular place at the conference. He earned him the right to a particular level of assertiveness, belligerence, as it is seen by Lloyd George and Wilson and their various delegations, and a hard-headedness, which meant that he believed that France was entitled to certain concessions from the Allies, particularly those that pertain to the punishment of Germany. For France, the stakes are perhaps the highest at the conference. The British, by 1919, had already managed to seize the German Navy and disable it as a threat. It was sailed by the German Navy to the British naval base at Scapa Flow, where the Germans eventually scuttle the fleet when the Royal Navy is out on manoeuvres. The colonies in Africa are handed over to the British in the main, and Britain is able at the conference with relative ease to start the dismemberment of the Ottoman Empire largely in its favour. The level of destruction to France, as we've said, is immense, and the possibility of a renewed war is still there. The British have the English Channel, and at this point air power isn't a sufficient enough threat to London, though it must be pointed out that in 1918 London is actually bombed by German Gotha four-engine bombers for the first time. So the maintenance of wartime allies and alliances is the key to everything. Again, Margaret Macmillan writes, as he told the Chamber of Deputies in December 1918, to preserve this entente, I will make any sacrifice. During the peace conference, he held firm that, even through the worst disagreements, the French public must remember, he told his closest advisers, that without America and England, France would perhaps no longer actually exist. And he remarked to David Lloyd George, when the two were engaged in one of their many quarrels, my policy at the conference, as I hope you'll acknowledge, is one of close agreement with Great Britain and America. However, Clemenceau had a problem in that the Quai d'Orsay, where the French foreign ministry was, and throughout other parts of the French government, bitter memories of perfidious Albion and the centuries-old loathing, mutual loathing between Britain and France really was a significant factor in causing all manner of problems between the two victorious powers. It seemed at some times that Clemenceau was alone in wanting a future alliance with the Anglosphere. Clemenceau saw Wilson as an uptight and rather patronising figure, somebody who had the manner of a priest, a rather priggish sort of character, who talked down to him and had the temerity to come up with these ludicrous notions such as 14 points which would govern world affairs. Lloyd George he saw as an entirely more crafty character. He, I think, had more admiration for Lloyd George, but trusted him less. And particularly the negotiations between Lloyd George and Clemenceau over the Middle East are very revealing. Lloyd George asked for the map of Mesopotamia and Syria, or Iraq and Syria, as we would understand it, to be drawn up in a particular way which favoured the British, and Clemenceau fell for it. Lloyd George asked for Mosul to be included in Mesopotamia and not Syria, and Lloyd George knew full well that there was oil at Mosul, and he kept this significant factor from Clemenceau. Clemenceau, knowing that he could gain other concessions from Lloyd George, said, you must have it. Lloyd George entered the meeting and said simply, I want Mosul. And Clemenceau said, yes, that's fine, whatever you want, not realising quite how valuable it was. The French interest in the Middle East was more a project of Raymond Poincaré, the president, than it was Clemenceau, the prime minister, perhaps which accounts for Clemenceau's blunder over Mosul. Also, the French foreign ministry at the Quai d'Orsay and France's colonial lobbyists and colonial enthusiasts within government all were passionate about a renewed French presence in the Middle East. One of the reasons for this is because parts of the French economy were seen to be damaged beyond repair. The desire for revenge and for territories from Germany couldn't be sated easily. Having France, having Alsace and Lorraine back, well, that's fine. Those have large French populations and have arguably always been part of France. But there was no desire really to annex any part of the German-speaking world. So territories, colonial territories overseas that were prestigious and had deep connections to French culture, such as Syria, one of the sites of the Crusades, which had been occupied by the Knights Hospitalier and the Knights in castles like the Carac du Chevalier and things like that in the Bekaa Valley. These were places that the French government and French popular culture and French intellectual culture had a deep emotional attachment to. So securing Syria from the view of Poincaré and the Quai d'Orsay was a significant act, not really on Clemenceau's radar. And so there's a great deal of exasperation about his handling of acquiring colonial goodies at the conference. He is far more focused on the danger of Germany, and his motivation really was that he had lived through two invasions by Germany, as had many other French citizens, but he felt it keenly that defence against Germany was the key priority. Clemenceau would not reveal prior to the conference what he was going to secure or attempt to secure He had won the war, and he demanded a vote of confidence in him, which he won 398 votes to 93, believing that, with some justification, that he had a mandate to speak on behalf of the French nation. I believe that the reason why he didn't wish to be explicit and put his cards on the table was partly because it was a bad negotiating strategy, but also because he himself was highly ambiguous and kind of ambivalent about what it was possible from the conference and what it was even desirable from the conference. Anyway, I'm going to finish here. Please, if you can, have a look at our Patreon page. If you can sponsor us at all, that'd be great. And also, if you can give us a good thumbs up on the Explaining History iTunes page, that'd be wonderful too. Anyway, I hope you find this useful, and we'll continue with some more stuff on the Peace Conference later this week. And we've got a whole bunch of cool stuff coming up throughout the week for you. So I hope you enjoy that. All the best. Bye-bye.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.